Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast. Hey, everyone. This is David Nagel. I'd like to welcome you to the Successful Mind Podcast. We encourage questions at tsm@davidnagel.com. And you can leave us a voicemail at speakpipe.com/David Nagel. We've gotten a few questions about mother-father wounds, transitioning the paradigm that our parents left us, kind of making sense of why did we go through what we went through as children. And I wanted to talk about it. I always find these things really fascinating. It seems like I get questions that come in batches. And for those of you that are coaches out there, I'm sure that you could probably relate. It's like you get one question after another, basically on the same thing over a period of days or weeks. And this is one that definitely keeps coming up that I think that I'm going to address it today in some detail and probably dedicate some future podcasts to the topic and maybe bring in some guests in the future around this to just get some different opinions and points of view are always a really good thing. But because it's a real issue. It's a real issue, and it was a major issue for me because I spent basically 7 years trying to figure out why the fuck I was doing the things that I was doing in my life that were not productive, not being the man and the husband and the father that I wanted to be. And like I've said many times before, the study process that I went through really didn't have anything to do with me starting a business. It was really trying to figure out myself, human potential, why people do the things that they do. I was very confused by the things that I saw my parents and my grandparents do, even my extended family, for that matter, watching their behavior as I grew up. I was kind of, I was one of these kids that, if I had the opportunity to spend time with adults at home, grandparents, aunts, uncles, that type of thing, I would much rather be sitting around at the kitchen table listening to them talk than out playing with my friends. I was fascinated by the conversations and the topics of discussion and the viewpoints and the questions that it left in my mind. My father was not necessarily a fan of this. He was always trying to kick me out of the house and get me away from adult conversation and to go play with my friends. And I used to fight him on this. I would beg to be able to stay in the house and participate in the conversation. And the other thing was I was fascinated by where we came from as a family, and there were significant issues that went on in our family that I was really seeking answers to, and there was always a lot of discussion around a lot of those issues that were going on. So I was, I was kind of like a fly on the wall when it came to that, and I think that for a lot of individuals, one of the difficulties that we have in life is trying to wrap our mind around significant experiences that we had as a child that weren't necessarily good, and determining a couple of things, like what did they mean? So one of the things that human beings do is we give meaning to everything. I remember when I first learned that everything in the universe just is, and it really has no other meaning than the meaning that we assign to it. So the moment that we find ourselves assigning meaning to something, we generally create a story around it, and then that story tells us what to do with it, how do we compartmentalize it in our mind, what does it mean? And in many cases, unfortunately, it becomes a foundation for how we then react to similar situations as we're going through our life. Now, probably most individuals react to different situations and circumstances and things that happen in their environment based on the information that they have stored in their subconscious mind and in their memory. And that's what tells them how to deal with it. It tells them what to do with it. It gives them the stored information that they have around it. It'll also tell them how to feel about what they're experiencing. And in the content of whatever it is that's going on, there's a certain amount of information that is then recalled or replayed in the mind that we use to try to navigate our way through the problem. Now, here's the problem with this. If the information is not true, like from a universal standpoint being true, we create quite the problem for ourselves, because what we usually do is we take a hard position on what our belief system is around what's going on. And then if we're in an interaction with, say, a spouse, a sibling, a parent, a coworker, a boss, an employee, whoever it might be in our life, the only information that we have to pull from, unless we've actually gone in and done the work to make the change, is the information based on the experience and the meaning that we gave to that experience and how we compartmentalize that experience, and then it tells us what it is to do with it. So it's one of the reasons why we continue to have certain experiences replay themselves over and over again in our life, and we don't make a lot of progress breaking through. It's the reason why we find ourselves in the same relationship issues, even if we change relationships. And I also think that it's a foundation for not achieving the goals that we want to achieve in life, because whenever we set a goal for ourselves, if we're setting a goal properly, which means that we're going to attempt to do something that we've never done before to reach a different level of achievement, in order for that to happen, we literally have to be something different in the way that we think, the way that we respond emotionally, the habits and behaviors that we create in order to accomplish that goal. If we have not changed foundational thinking patterns that basically keep us safe, then anything that's outside of the norm becomes unknown. And the unknown in our mind is a real conundrum, because subconsciously our mind wants to always keep us in a place where we're actually feeling certainty as far as an emotional state, and we have an intellectual understanding of how to actually stay safe. So if you think about the fact that when we're little kids, especially in the infant stage of our life, we absolutely have to have our parents in order to stay safe. We have to have our parents in order to survive at all. So we will adapt our behavior to whatever it is that our parents approve of or disapprove of as we're growing up. So we learn that really quick. And as we learn that, we learn what is approved by mom and what is approved by dad. And we certainly learn what is disapproved by mom and by dad. And then that causes us to have a feeling of insecurity or uncertainty or not feeling safe. And that's where we go into pattern adjustment, changing who we are, how we're showing up. You know, if you think about it like this, you all know that there were certain times where it was okay, it felt safe to ask for something from your mom or your dad. And you may have felt a little bit nervous that you were going to ask for whatever it is that you were going to ask for, because it meant something to you. And you didn't want to hear the infamous word no, that you can't have it. And what's even worse than that is that if we asked for something that was too big and we had some kind of an intuitive feeling that the thing that we were asking for you might not be received well, we may have been very hesitant about asking for that, but what's more unfortunate is that very often we would be shamed for asking for something that was too big. Maybe it was outside of mom and dad's budget. Maybe it was outside of their comfort zone. Maybe it was outside of their ability to provide us that for various different reasons. One of the reasons, though, that I find it's interesting is the judgment that our parents would feel by giving us certain things that may be outside of the norm of what they experienced in their family life growing up, what their current friends or peer group are providing for their children, or just the general neighborhood that we live in. Like think about it like this. If you grew up in, say, a working class neighborhood and your dad showed up in a Ferrari one day, it would be noticeable, right? It would be noticeable, and I'll guarantee you it would be judged. Now, some of the guys in the neighborhood might be like, hey, man, that's fucking cool. Your dad pulled up in a Ferrari. Everybody comes and checks it out. But you know as well as I do that the judgment's what's going to come next, because the people walk around with all kinds of feelings of inadequacy inside of themselves. And then when one of the Joneses down the street pulls up in a Ferrari, they're going to be thinking to themselves, you know, I'm not as good as this person. They start comparing. And then the child is exposed to whatever the conversation is around their judgment around this guy pulling up in a Ferrari. And of course, what's most beneficial to you in this podcast is to think about when your parents had an experience like that with other people in their life, whether other people in their life got something more than they did. Maybe it was a promotion. Maybe it was a change in relationship. Maybe it was a new house. Maybe it was redecorating their house or remodeling their house. Maybe it was kind of an extravagant vacation, but you know, something outside of the norm that would definitely cause conversation in the household. And then if somebody else did that, which was outside of the norms, somebody in the neighborhood or somebody in the peer group, the conversation that ensued inside the house around that. So we get these judgments. So that's kind of based on, thinking, keeping up with the Joneses, stepping outside of a comfort zone, and a lot of judgmental stuff. But now let's flip this a little bit for a moment, because what about experiences in our life that came out of just pure dysfunction from our parents or from other people in our family? And I run into this over and over and over again. I have for a long period of time. It was something that I really didn't expect to experience when I decided to become a coach, because when I decided to become a coach, my main focus at that time was helping people increase their income, and to do that in a really short period of time, because that was a skill set that I was mastering. And I had become really good at doing that for myself, and I was becoming really good at helping other people do that. So as I began to develop that skill set, and I began to coach people in their ability to do that, I was making a pretty good name for myself because the results were pretty astounding. But what I was also running into was all the different things that would cause people not to be able to do it. And that's where I started finding out a lot of different things about people's lives, things in their childhood, stories that they were carrying, hurts, wounds, places where boundaries were broken, and people had really developed patterns and ways of being that were stopping them from doing something that actually really is relatively easy. I'll just make mention of it here. And then if you want more information on this, I'm happy to do more podcasts around this. Maybe even BT and I can do a series on it with some question and answer stuff. But really, making a lot of money and doing it in a very short period of time is actually a very easy thing to do. And I don't want to make light of it and make it sound like there's no work involved or there's some magical formula or whatever. But really, when it comes down to it, it's like a 98% mindset situation in order to be able to increase your income. So when I would deal with people, and still today when I deal with people that are trying to increase their income, or they get stuck in any area financially, and I'm talking about the person that's stuck at $20,000 a year, the person that's stuck at $20 million a year, it really doesn't matter. They're stuck. There's some story that's going on in there that is keeping them stuck at that level. And I will guarantee you, no matter what it is that's going on in their life currently, that story is going to relate directly back to when they were a child. It's something that happened in their childhood. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, is that really true, David? Is that something that it's that way for everybody? And the answer is yes, and I'll tell you why. There's two very significant ages that we're really experiencing programming as a kid. So I'll say three. I'm going to break it down into three just to give you a little context on what this looks like. So you have from the moment of conception of a child, and while the child is in utero and developing inside the mother, the state, the emotional state and experiences that the mother is going through during that 9-month time frame are very significant to what's going on with that baby inside of the mom. And there have been study after study after study, some arguing against this idea, some arguing for the idea. What we pretty much know currently is that the physical, emotional, mental state of the mother has a great and direct impact upon the child while they're being formed inside the mother during that 9 months of development. Now you have the child, you know, they're born, they come on the scene, they're that little infant, and from that period to about 7 years old, there's no conscious mind developed. So everything that the child is experiencing about life, and I'm talking about the experiences that the child is experiencing, the way that they're learning, the way that they're developing, and the emotions that they're subjected to, the psychology that they're subjected to, the beliefs, the values, all the ideas, the images, everything that's going on around this child is just being absorbed like a sponge into that magnificent mind of theirs, because the subconscious mind doesn't have the ability to reject. So the rejection part of our mind actually starts to develop around 7 years old, and that's the conscious mind. That's what allows us to critically think. That's what allows us to evaluate. So when we hit that stage of development, the question then is, where are we getting the information to evaluate what we're experiencing? And where we're getting that information is from what has been stored in the subconscious mind up to that age. So what we do is we go out and we start to experience life, and we have these experiences, and then the only information that we can pull from to make sense of those experiences is what we've been programmed to think prior to 7 years old. Anything that we don't know, we generally are asking questions about, or we're being taught through various educational institutions. And then you also have the time frame between 7 and, say, 13, where we're getting information from two sources. One would be the subconscious mind. Two would be the education that we're getting from various people and how that impacts our development. In all three of those stages, in utero, in infancy, and as the child is developing from, say, 2 to 13 years old, the child is having a variety of different experiences, and generally they're being exposed to different circumstances, different environments, and people within those environments who have, of course, their own life view, their own values, their own opinions, their judgments, their prejudices, their beliefs, their ethics, the way that they view the world, and they have something else that's very important. They have the secrets and the things that they're hiding and the dysfunctions that they're trying to suppress that they don't want anybody to know about. So all of this information makes up how a child is really experiencing their life. And it affects the way that they view money, the way money is spent, the amount of money that a family has or does not have. It affects how they view sex, because sex is introduced into a child from an early age as part of their education and frankly, just part of their curiosity about their own body and, you know, where babies come from and how that's born. I always still find it astounding how many children by the age of puberty have not had a real conversation with their parents about their own sexuality and the way that their body works. From a place where the parent doesn't feel really uncomfortable about having that conversation with the child. I mean, even if we're talking about a child who is starting to explore their own body and explore masturbation, for a lot of parents, that's really horrific. And it's embarrassing. And when they find out that their child is exploring their body in that way, they get shamed and judged for it. So the child then internalizes that experience into their own subconscious mind, and it starts to form and shape the way that child is going to view their sexuality going forward. So if they don't get any new information, or somebody comes along in their life that actually helps them view sex in a healthy way, They're going to start having sexual hangups as they begin to go through life, which I could get into for another hour, but I won't. We could talk about it in another podcast if you're interested in that. But we talked a little bit about the hangups and things that we can get from money, the hangups that we can get from sex. Now, here's another thing. Whether we are directly given a religious education or we're not, most of the values and the ethics that our world runs by, were developed in some kind of religious philosophy and history throughout life. It gives us some guidelines and some boundaries and ideas of how do we show up, how do we treat our brother, how do we value what we're bringing to society, how do we develop ourselves as a person, the difference between right and wrong, and really understanding that difference. And also the consequence for doing wrong, for making mistakes, whether it's an intentional mistake or it's a mistake out of ignorance or accident. We all know that there's consequences for all mistakes. So in many cases, when religion gets involved, there are indications of eternal damnation because of some of the mistakes that people may make, in their life, or being ostracized from the church, or being ostracized from the community, or being branded as a bad person in one way or another because of something that they did. And by the way, a lot of this happens to young kids. They get teachers that view a child that is having difficulty in school, and they brand the kid a troublemaker, the class clown, the stupid kid, the kid with the abusive parents, whatever it is. That gets passed on from one teacher to another. And I know this to be fact. I've known many teachers that I have coached, counseled, and worked with through my career. And they have all, every one of them has told me the story that those are things that take place within school systems. So the kid's never really given a chance to break out of the behavior. Hopefully, at some point, they're lucky enough to meet a teacher that really does care and recognize that there's something going on with the kid and take the kid under their wing and give them some guidance. Then you've got parents that are just completely dysfunctional. They're fighting. They don't know how to get along. They don't know how to set boundaries. Maybe they are physically, emotionally, verbally, sometimes sexually abusive to their own children. Sometimes they have substance abuse issues. Many times they have maturity issues. They can't hold a job. They can't manage their money. They're exposing children to toxic people because the people that they hang around are toxic. So this is a subject that I can give examples of this all day long, but I think you get the idea. So now what happens is you have a child that grows up, they go into their adulthood, and there's really struggling in life because they've got all these patterns from parents and experiences and people of authority in their childhood, and they're trying to make their way in their own life. Two things take place at this point that I think are very important to mention. One is that you have the child that's very ignorant to their own behavior. I should say, let me rephrase that. The child is now an adult or a young adult, and they're very ignorant to their own behavior. So if they're dysfunctional, if they're toxic, if they're misbehaving, if they're immature, very often they're ignorant to the idea that they're doing that, even though they are experiencing the consequences or ramifications around those things, like maybe being disciplined at work or fired from a job or being arrested or doing escapism activities like, over drinking or drugs or risky behavior or whatever, whatever it might be. Maybe they are being abusive to their husband or to their girlfriend or their wife, and possibly even their own children, which is sad, but it's a very big reality that we're dealing with. These kids, then, it's being passed on from one generation to another. So you've got the parent that's ignorant to all of this, and then you have the parent that is waking up to the fact that something's seriously wrong with the way that they're showing up in the world, and they want help. And they're not necessarily sure where to get the help or how to go actually about doing that. So they start the exploration. So maybe it starts with therapy. Maybe it starts in the self-help section of a bookstore. Maybe it starts with counseling, or it starts with an AA meeting or an anger management meeting, or somebody that cares about them really pulling them aside and saying, hey, you know, you're really going down a bad road here. There's going to be severe consequences if you don't change it. And they start to try to wake up. And when they start to try to wake up to this, what they're facing is the pain, the hurt, the anger, the resentment, the vindictiveness that they're harboring based on the negative experiences they had as a child. And one of the main questions that I get is, how do I let that go and move forward and become a healthy person? So I'm going to give you a couple of ideas here for you to really think about and to really consider, because it's difficult, yet it is not as difficult as it actually seems if we're really dealing with some truth. If we can bring some truth and some light into this subject, then I think that it can have a profound impact in our life. Excuse me, and it can have a profound impact rather quickly. So in order to reframe these things in our mind, we have to understand some basic truths. And without these basic truths, it becomes very difficult to step out of the negativity or the negative experience or emotions of what we experienced as a child. So the first thing is that we have to learn, like self-improvement 101, which is I take full responsibility for everything that I'm thinking, feeling, doing, and experiencing in my life. If a person can get to that place, what ends up happening is that they take their power back. So when we're raised in a dysfunctional way, either we never really get in touch with our power, or somebody takes that power from us and we don't have the power to change because we're raised with a victimized mentality. If we're raised with a victimized mentality, that means that other people, things, circumstances, situations, environments have power over us, or we believe that it has power over us, and we don't actually have the power to change because our internal dialogue and recognition of life is all of these other things in my life that are going wrong need to change so that I can change, so that I can get better. That is an incorrect viewpoint, and it was probably developed because you had parents and you were around people that totally believed that they were victims. What's even worse about this is that it's reinforced through media all over the world that we're victims. So if we can get to the point through maybe some counseling or conversation with people or some reading some good literature, we could understand that we always have had the ability to own our responsibility for our life and really take that back in a conscious awareness perspective and apply it to our life. Now, what's cool about this is that we then can begin to reframe the process of our childhood in order to begin to heal and to step into becoming a mature adult that is living an amazing life and contributing to the world. How does that start? Well, I believe that it starts by taking in this idea into consideration. I think that there is no victimization in the world or in the universe, period. If there was, it wouldn't be able to function. So the truth has to be empowerment. The truth has to be responsibility. The truth has to be choice. The question then is, when did we get the ability to choose? When did we get the ability to accept self-responsibility? When did we get the ability to chart our own course in life? My opinion, and it is my opinion, is that this happened prior to our birth or prior to us being conceived. I think that we all have a soul. Our soul is eternal. You can call it spirit, you can call it energy, you can call it whatever you want, but I think it's eternal. And I think that part of our human experience, being a spiritual being, having a human experience, is that wherever our soul existed in whatever experience prior to our birth, we made a choice to come into the world and have the experiences that we're having. Maybe not knowing specifically what those experiences were going to be, but in order to learn the lessons that we need so that our soul can continue on in this journey of awareness and conscious expansion. So that means that we chose to be born into the family dynamic that we were in order for us to learn lessons. And in order for us to learn those lessons, we had to go through whatever it is that we went through so that we could exercise our most important power, which is our ability to choose. And that choice that we're making is, how do we view those hardships that we went through as a child? We can either view them from a victim perspective, or we can view them from an empowered perspective. And then the way that we view that determines what we do with that information. We have total evidence. We have total scientific evidence. We have all kinds of statistics that show that there are children that are born under the worst circumstances imaginable, and they find their way through that, and they turn out to be amazing adults that help a lot of people. We also find the flip side of that, where you have children that were born into what seems to be the most ideal circumstances in life, and they turn out to be, you know, like serial killers, like the, you know, the worst of the worst. And then we've got, of course, everything in between. The key point, though, is that we have to, at some point, wake up to the idea that we have the ability to choose what we're going to do with the experiences that we had as a child. So back to the question that I get all the time is, how do I make sense or separate myself from negative experiences that I had as a child so that I can be a good adult that is contributing to society, that is mature, that is able to have healthy relationships, that is able to be in full expression of who I am, and not be controlled by those problems that we had as a child. And really, the way for us to do that is to understand what are all of the lessons that we learned or could learn from the individual experiences that we had as a child. So those things that happened that were negative, they also have, yes, we experienced something negative, we experienced something painful, we may have experienced downright atrocities in our life. However, there has to be a positive side to it, because that's the law of polarity. And if we can pull the positive side out, if we can see it, then we understand something very interesting in that awareness. We needed those people to play the role that they were playing in order for us to learn what we needed to learn to come out as a powerful, mature, contributing, loving adult. If they didn't play those roles, we would have never learned those lessons. And I go back to saying again, those lessons, how you learn them, even if you're waking up at 50 and learning those lessons, they're choices. That's a choice that you have to make in order to be, hey, I'm going to either be the consummate victim my entire life because my childhood was shit, or I can look at my childhood and say, yeah, there were a lot of shitty things in my childhood. However, here's what I learned out of this. Maybe I had a vindictive mother and an angry father who was an alcoholic, but what I was able to learn was compassion. What I was able to learn was empathy. And because I was able to learn those things, I was able to heal myself, and now I'm able to go out and have compassion and empathy with other people that are struggling. So instead of judging them as being like my parents, I could reach out and try to find to help them see the light so that they could change their life. Every single thing that we have gone through has been a lesson to help us become aware of the purpose that we're here to fulfill in our life. And I am a very firm believer that everybody is here with the ability to choose to live an absolutely amazing life for themselves. But you have to do two very, very important things to do this. One, you have to be willing to step into 100% responsibility. 100% responsibility does not mean that something that someone did to you that was wrong or atrocious or horrific was right. I'm not saying that, okay? I am not victim shaming here. What I'm saying is that those things were wrong. They were not the right things to do. But the question is, why did you experience it? And if you can answer that a question from a non-victimized perspective, we can come from a higher form of consciousness, and we can make the choice to change because we're accepting responsibility. That allows us to then be free of the "I was a victim" idea. Because if I walk around the rest of my life where I was a victim, I'm always a victim, right? Because it's still part of the conversation. I'm not a victim. There were things that happened in my childhood that I didn't like, but I'm not a victim. I chose at some level to be involved in those experiences and learn great things because of them, and continue to learn great things because of them, so that I can go out there and live the best life that I could possibly live for myself. So if I want to leave you with anything in this podcast, it's this. You're not a victim. You have the ability to choose. And how you reconcile what happened with your parents was in two ways. Number one, you have to realize your parents' dysfunction didn't come out of nowhere. They had to be raised and exposed to dysfunction in order for them to become dysfunctional. No child is born dysfunctional. It's something that's actually learned. So that will help you have a little bit more compassion and empathy for the way that your parents were when you were a child, even if you don't like the way that they were. I'm not saying you have to like it. But when you move from compassion and empathy, when you're actually viewing your parents as a child, it allows you to ask yourself the question, what do I need to learn from this so that I can go out and step into my purpose? Because everything that you experienced is part of your purpose. So that is the way to separate yourself from the pain and the anguish and the victimization of what you went through in your childhood, and to really step in your power, exercise your choice, and accept responsibility. Go out and make it a great day. Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.